This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 16th of May, 2014. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending May the 16th, 2014. I'd just like to say if you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter for this week, and your readers are Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
Claire Porter.
Hello.
And we're all sitting up straight and on our very best behaviour today because we have a special guest reader with us, and he is none other than our hard-working chairman of Winchester Talking Newspapers, John Richards.
Hello.
It's very good to have you here with us, John. And normally at this point we would tell you who has edited the Hampshire Chronicle, but the sad fact is we didn't have any editors this week. They've all gone on holiday. So for this week we've decided that we would all have a go at editing. And a little later on in this recording you'll hear what we've done, and we do hope that our regular editors will feel we've done them justice. But from now, though, we'd like you to have all the regular features, and we'll begin, as usual, with Claire reading Christian Comment. Thank you, Claire.
It is entitled, Let Us Show Solidarity with Minorities, and it's written by Terry E. Hemming. Over 30 years ago, we were living in Borno State, Nigeria, when one weekend there was an attack on a mosque by a militant Islamist group, and following fighting with the police, over 200 were left dead. There was no landline, mobiles did not exist, and email was yet to come. As a result, no one knew or worried about it, and we carried on as normal. As Christians living among Muslims in the north, we enjoyed good relationships and were proud to have friends and colleagues with whom we shared much in common. Although very much in the minority, Christian congregations of hundreds and even over 1,000 were not uncommon. Islam had come to many, many centuries earlier, and the wealth of learning and practice gave a confidence to the Muslims who were not threatened by Christian activity. Indeed, my wife, working in a church-led rural health program, had an enthusiastic Muslim on her team. Following the costly Biafran War, Igbos had returned from the south, and we were amazed at how the scars had apparently healed. Yes, there were differences, but regional distinctives are there in any country. The loss of life this year in the north, with the apparent lack of interest in the girls who were abducted by Boko Haram, has been sad. I was glad to see former students from Winchester championing their cause. Hooray for the Onuzo sisters, bringing to our attention the needs of Nigeria. I hope our government will do all it is allowed and able to do to help recover these girls. It would be wrong, however, for us then to see this as further evidence of the backwardness of Islam. Much of the violence has been against Muslims, as well as Christians. It is a struggle against modernity, and often when there is rapid change in society, people turn back to conservative values. Again, we see in many societies that religion is coerced to be part of that, whether Hindu, Christian, Buddhist, or Islamic. Our solidarity is with both Christians and Muslims who suffer from the violent and repressive acts of those who speak in the name of religion. When Christians call for violence against minorities, I hope we shall be brave enough to stand up for the minorities. And when Muslims call for violence against minorities, we shall not be afraid to show solidarity with them also. Jesus spoke of the danger of seeing the speck in someone else's eye while ignoring the beam in ours. Using ironical language, he was pointing out how easy it is to condemn people for sins which we are committing on a grander scale. And that was written by Terry E. Hemming.
Thank you very much, Claire. And it's on to death notices now, which we will all read for you. And I'm very sad to say that it is quite a lot of death announcements this week. And I will begin. Abbott, George William Abbott, coachman and hornblower, 3rd of May in Winchester Hospital, aged 89.
Barker, Terry Barker, suddenly at home on 6th of May, aged 71.
Brooke, Joyce Brooke, on the 5th of May, aged 91 years.
Chipperfield, Tom Chipperfield, 3rd of May, at home, aged only 26.
Early, Mary Early, peacefully, 6th of May, aged 89 years.
Godwin, Leslie John Godwin, late of Godwin's chemist, Bishop's Waltham, peacefully on the 5th of May, aged 94 years.
Holbrook, Christopher Holbrook, at home, 29th of April, aged 47.
Hollyhurst, Naomi Hollyhurst, peacefully on the 2nd of May.
Keane, Joyce Keane, former district nurse, 11th of May in hospital, aged 82 years.
Marks, Howard Stuckey Marks, on 1st of May, aged 74.
McVeigh, Anne Rosemary McVeigh, formerly of Winchester, died in Dorset on the 6th of May, aged 67.
Peterson, Anthony Tony Peterson, peacefully on 7th of May, aged 40 years.
Phillips, Harry Phillips, after a short illness, 4th of May, aged 91.
Pond, K. Pond, née Davies, 4th of May.
Redsell, David Edward Redsell, 5th of May.
Rogerson, Kathleen Moira Rogerson, in her home on the 6th of May, aged 87.
Small, Jill Small, suddenly, 6th of May, aged 82.
Smith, Robert Trevor Smith, peacefully, 7th of May, aged 58.
Stillwell, Pat Stillwell, peacefully in hospital, 2nd of May, aged 79.
Thank you very much. And it's time now for letters to the editor. We have extracted letters from the paper with relevance to the news, and they will appear a little bit later on with those items of news. But in the meantime, there are some general subject letters, and I'd like Jerry to start with the first one, please.
Which is headed, Do the Planners Police Themselves? And it comes from Freddie Crabb. When he was Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams warned, the underlying reason for all concealment is bound to be corrupt and mysticificatory. How are planning applications vetted in this area of outstanding natural beauty, which is under attack from speculators buying plots of land and hoping to build houses? Every excuse is attempted when asking about an application, concealing facts and even making false claims, which should mean rejection. But the planners say the fee has been paid. My point is that the application should not have been accepted. It defies relevant law. I believe it is corrupt to accept applications simply because the fee was paid. It wastes time and taxpayers' money. Do planners police themselves? Freddie Crabb, Hensting Lane, Oslebury, Winchester.
This letter from Nigel Richardson has a whopping great pothole ahead of it. And the letter is entitled HCC Liable, So Why Won't They Pay Up? Last year, I was on a long-planned road trip through Hampshire, destination Spain, with overnight hotel booked in historic Winchester and ferry from Portsmouth the next day. I was even pulling in a tank driving experience along the way, a Christmas gift from my family, fulfilling my childhood wish to be a tank commander. Lucky me. All was going well driving through the glorious Hampshire countryside until I hit a large pothole that ripped open a tyre and buckled my wheels. Not so lucky me. These things are sent to try us, but from that moment most of my plans fell apart. Hampshire County Council did apologise and admit liability for this incident, but over the past 9 months I have been trying unsuccessfully to get a reasonable payment of compensation from them. I discovered that HCC are a self-insured organisation, which must be code for "we have no intention of making a fair payout," as they offered me a derisory £450, barely the cost of one replacement tyre for my car. Yes, I do have a very nice car, but that's what they cost, and let's be fair, liability was admitted, and I can justify every last penny of my claim. I don't expect sympathy, but I am substantially out of pocket, even more so if I took into account the time devoted to pursuing my claim. That aside, my actual out-of-pocket costs are about £2,500. As I said, I can justify every last penny, but HCC just won't pay me, forcing me to pursue the matter through the courts to recover what is fairly due to me. The council has no intention of paying me a fair settlement. This is the sort of game normally associated with rogue traders, in the hope that the cost of pursuing the claim, or the resolve of the claimant, will evaporate before they have to pay out. This is a shameful indictment of a local authority, there to serve the people, not just of Hampshire, but also for those of us travelling through your county and using the roads that we all pay for. Nigel Richardson, Rearsby, Leicestershire.
This letter is from Andy Davidson and has the title, Why is Winchester Unrepresented? I empathise with Karen Barrett's comment on the station approach development and her feeling that the decision had already been made. I attended a meeting of the Planning and Development Control Committee to object to an item on the agenda and came away with the same feeling. Could the problem be that within the Cabinet there is not one member who represents a ward within the actual city of Winchester, and that in the Planning and Development Control Committee there is only one, the member for St Paul's? Surely major decisions affecting this great city should be decided by the representatives of its residents and not by the representatives from places such as Bishop's Waltham or Swanmore. Andy Davidson, Fleming Road, Winchester.
Mike Caldwell, organiser of Grand Day Out, entitles his letter, Grand Day Out Defies SPAA Snub. Sir, Save the Wrecks Grand Day Out attracted an estimated 3,000 people and was a huge success introducing many people to sports and physical activities they may not have thought was for them. No thanks, sadly, to Winchester District Sport and Physical Activity Alliance, SPAA, despite its website stating that it is, quote, a key government priority at national, regional and local level to create a healthier, more physically active sporting nation, unquote. Indeed, one of its priorities, as set out in its community strategy, is, quote, removing barriers to participation, as well as using sport and physical activity as a medium to promote community cohesion and sustainability, unquote. Imagine my disbelief when the Winchester District SPAA refused to include details of Grand Day Out in its spring newsletter, the project support officer deeming it, quote, predominantly a campaign event and not a sporting event, unquote. When I queried this judgment, the City Council's head of sport upheld this officer's stance. Great Grand Day Out may have had at its heart a message to keep it green beyond the stream, but in view of the fact that Winchester District SPAA was established in 2006 and subsequently drawing upon the 2012 Olympics to, quote, ensure that there is a lasting legacy of benefits which are available to all of the residents of the district, unquote, I fail to see how the Grand Day Out could not have been more on message. It was a day showcasing cricket, rugby, tennis, canoeing, bowling, football, croquet and more, all taking place for free on one of the district's recreation grounds. Assuming this is a taxpayer-funded newsletter, one has to question the SPAA's true motive and independence. I couldn't help but notice that DC Leisure staff are listed amongst its members. DCL's name change is an item in the SPAA newsletter, the relevance of which is beyond me. Perhaps that is why they were reluctant to promote a sport and physical activity lead event in the Winchester District for the Winchester District, and which so closely sits with their stated remit. That's from Mike Caldwell, organiser, Grand Day Out, Nuns Road, Winchester.
Thank you all very much. And as I said earlier, there are other letters, but they will be amongst the main body of the news that they relate to. You might have a subject or an opinion to air in the Hampshire Chronicle. And if you do, it would be our pleasure to read it out for you. But you can contact the Chronicle on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836, or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's Hampshire Chronicle, all lowercase and one word. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And we're coming on now to my favourite section, which is historical items. I think it's fascinating, actually, to hear how the different styles of reporting and the subjects they choose of news changes from 200 years ago right the way down to 25 years. The trouble is, I can remember some of the 25 and 50-year report items. And that's John's go now with 200 years, please.
Yes, 200 years ago, that's May the 16th, 1814. I have two pieces here. Clothes ablaze in firework factory. I'm not quite sure how these two items go under that headline, but we'll see. Dispatches were yesterday received by government announcing the arrival of Bonaparte at the island of Elba. He embarked on board the undaunted frigate to be conveyed to that place. Throughout the whole of the south of France, wherever he passed, he was hooted by the populace and in some places stoned. Sometimes he was obliged to mix with his attendants and conceal himself from the fury of the people and to join in the cry of Vive les Bourbons. And in short, his whole journey was one of peril. The second piece, and I think this is where the headline comes in. Yesterday afternoon at about 4 o'clock, a shocking accident happened at the fireworks manufactory of Messrs. Mottram in the Westminster Road near the asylum. By some means or other, a quantity of the compounds which had been prepared for making fireworks caught fire and exploded with a shock which alarmed the neighbourhood. A man and two boys were at the time employed in mixing the compositions. The fire set their clothes in a blaze. They ran out immediately for assistance and on their way passed close to a barrel of gunpowder, which fortunately did not take fire.
Ooh. 100 years ago, May the 16th, 1914. Daring Frenchman Wows the Crowds is the title for this first paragraph. Among those men who may be regarded as being on the very pinnacle of fame in the art of aeroplaning, there is Monsieur Gustave Hamel, the daring young Frenchman who has surprised, alarmed and delighted crowds at Hendon and elsewhere. Hence, it was not surprising that on Thursday last, when Monsieur Hamel appeared at Week Down near Winchester, many thousands gathered to see him, some people coming miles for the purpose. After several circling flights, he essayed a dive almost to the roadway outside the hangar. Those who were getting a free view at that point scurried like rabbits. And the second paragraph. Sir, I am venturing to write to you as a lady seeking what is not to be found in Winchester, the lack of nice flats suitable for ladies with small incomes, who often are the last members of old families. And as such are the possessors of good old furniture that it is impossible to stow in the wretched small rooms, often most inadequately lighted, of modern villas, so-called. I noticed many large high houses with very good basements in Southgate Street, on the St. Cross Road, Clifton Terrace and elsewhere, which have been standing empty for a long time. These houses could easily be converted into self-contained flats.
And 50 years ago, May the 16th, 1964, has two items. The first, the Conservatives held Winchester in Thursday's parliamentary by-election, but with a halved majority. There was a 70% poll, and the figures were Rear Admiral Morgan Giles, Conservative, 18,032, Patrick Sade, Labour, 11,968, John Edwards, Liberal, 4,567. In the first three-cornered contest for 35 years, the Liberal just saved his deposit by a margin of 246 votes. The Conservative majority of 6,064 is the lowest since the war. Their share of the vote was 55%, compared with 67% at the 1959 general election. Labour took 34% and the Liberals had 11%. And the second item, which justifies the title of New Green Jackets Museum. When the New Green Jackets Museum opens to the public next week, it will be the first opportunity for visits to see the treasures of all three regiments gathered under the same roof. It will be on view as part of an open day at the recently modernised Peninsula Barracks. Winchester. For nearly 3 years, the Museum of the Rifle Brigade and the King's Royal Rifle Corps had been situated in temporary premises.
25 years ago, May the 19th, 1989. Radical proposal for council offices. A radical proposal has been put forward by angry residents in one of Winchester's fastest growing areas. Move Hampshire County Council's headquarters out of the city centre. Fed up residents in Badger Farm say it often takes them over half an hour to travel the 3 miles from their homes into the city centre because of the continuous traffic congestion along the arterial roads such as Romsey Road and St Cross Road. Through their Winchester City Councillor, Mr Ray Feek, they've drawn up a plan of action, which he has compiled in a report entitled Winchester's Traffic Disaster. Well, plus ça change. And the second item is doctors and the Community Health Council have expressed criticism and concern about the provision of services for elderly people in Winchester Health District in a report published this week. General practitioners are particularly concerned about the impact of the increasing number of private nursing homes and rest homes, in that patients who would previously have been in hospital are transferred to the community sector, the report says. They feel that this has shifted the burden and complexity of medical care to services to which they have little input in terms of planning and management.
Thank you very much. And Westminster Diary this week has been written by George Hollingbury MP for the Meon Valley. And John is going to read it for us. Thank you.
And here it is, Westminster Diary by George Hollingbury. Complaining about services is a vital tool for the public because it holds organisations to account and makes them change their attitudes or practices. It's a difficult thing for Britons to do because we're not really a nation of complainers and don't want to cause a fuss. But cause a fuss we must if things are going to change for the better. Sadly, this country also doesn't really have a cohesive complaints structure that helps people to be listened to and problems and mistakes acted on. Therefore, I welcomed the report last month from a parliamentary committee called More Complaints, Please, that urges the government to improve the complaints procedure because when things go wrong in public services, they can have devastating consequences. And my constituency postbag is full of people who have fought gallantly for years for answers from authorities whilst dealing with those consequences, but getting nowhere. People who only wanted to be listened to and have their concerns looked into and acted on. They did not want compensation. They wanted to make sure something similar never happened to anyone else. We have helped them as much as we can in what has often been extremely frustrating cases, both for them and for myself and my staff. One particularly frustrating case was the constituent who has fought for answers about why a loved one, a diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic, and in the care of an NHS mental health service, was reported missing, allowed to fly abroad in 2012, and remains there because they are so ill. The case is complex, but a succession of bodies said the trust had acted in line with relevant standards. Never once have those standards been analysed. Instead, the trust has simply tried to justify them, inspire confidence in the system. Another case was a patient with a life-threatening condition. It took 2 years for the Ombudsman to acknowledge the poor standard of care, but no reassurance the failures that caused it aren't still in place. These complaints were dealt with by the service provider, and then an ombudsman in what is often a complicated, inflexible and unnecessary bureaucratic wrangle, taking many months or years. So the report's recommendation for a unified public ombudsman service for England that does away with all other ombudsman bodies is most welcome. But better is the report's desire for cultural change, that agencies need to see complaints as an opportunity to develop ways to learn from mistakes and give the public confidence things will change. Otherwise, the rather depressing statistic of 64% of people who complain not thinking it will make any difference will remain stubbornly high.
Thank you, John. And Jerry has your say this week.
which is concerned with a potential new law which will jail killer dog owners for up to 14 years. And the newspaper asked residents, is this fair? Jane Organ, 55, a carer of Bridge Close Burselden, said, some people do get dogs for the purpose of guarding their homes, but some train them to be aggressive, so I think the sentence could help stop the risk of attacks, even if it does sound like a long time. Dick Jones, 60, retired of Bishop's Waltham, said, people owning a dog which has killed or maimed someone should be treated the same as if they owned a gun. It's a lethal weapon and should come under the same law as murder. 14 years isn't enough. Hannah Gow, 28, aquarium guide of Winchester, said, 14 years is a bit extreme. People are responsible for their dogs, but others can also be responsible for their interactions, and that should be taken into account. They should bring back dog licences. And lastly, Ian Petrovsky, 73, retired, of Oliver's Battery, said, I don't think they should be imprisoned at all. If you don't control the dog and it causes injury, then the dog should be taken away and the owner should be banned from having another dog.
Food for thought there. Robin, you have first person, Ronald Allison, I think.
Yes, and it has the title Plenty Happening on the Pitch and at the Polls. No apologies for starting this month with a paragraph or two on football. After all, it has been a remarkable season for several clubs in our part of the world, including, not least, Portsmouth, for surviving in the Football League. Having written that, as a Southampton supporter, I must now celebrate the success of the Saints, and especially the selection of three of their players, Ricky Lambert, Adam Lallana and Luke Shaw, for the England World Cup squad. Last weekend, the Saints equalled their best season in the Premier League, finishing eighth and exceeding their previous highest points total. Under the management of Maurizio Pochettino, they played some of the most attractive football seen in the league. Many times they were a joy to watch, and it is no surprise that several players have attracted such admiration and attention. The downside of this is that, equally unsurprisingly, they are now on the wanted list of not only England, but of the bigger, richer clubs which rely on buying in talent rather than, in Southampton style, bringing on their own youngsters. As I write, I can only hope that the manager and his team are still at St Mary's at the start of next season. All of them? I'm afraid I doubt it. Two of the county's non-league clubs have also had remarkable seasons, and it is most certainly time for congratulating Eastleigh on winning promotion to the Conference, the fifth tier in English football, and Sholing of the Wessex League, in going all the way to Wembley to win the FA Vase. It is wonderful to see such success at these different levels. It would be great if Hampshire could manage promotion from Division 2 of the LV County Cricket Championship this summer to add to that success. This time next week, there will be other winners and losers. More of the latter, after the local and European elections. To add to all that literature pouring through our letterboxes, about which I was complaining last month, we have all been hearing from the candidates. In these cases, I do admit that such mail shots are justified, and these days, in the absence of public meetings, perhaps even necessary. Now it is up to us to play our part in the democratic process and to get out and vote. A good turnout really is important for all concerned, and it is our chance to express our feelings.
Thank you. Right, question and answer, My Winchester, has recently become a regular item in the Hampshire Chronicle. And that paper selects a resident within its distribution area and it quizzes them about their favourite aspects of Winchester. Well, this week it was the turn of James Marshall, a 42-year-old. He's in Kingsworthy and is an accountant and a company treasurer. Now, John will pose as James Marshall, although I have to say it didn't look anything like the photograph in the Hampshire Chronicle, but we'll pass on from that. And I'm going to ask the questions. Now, James, what's your favourite restaurant or cafe?
The Gandhi at the bottom of High Street ticks many boxes for me.
Mm. And your favourite pub or bar?
It has to be the Wickham Arms. But we're lucky to have so many good places to choose from.
And your favourite shop?
Waterstones, which is so good there are two of them.
Big reader, then. Your favourite building, James?
Well, first of all, do you want to know about the favourite view?
Well, if that comes before the building, then we'll go back.
Well, my favourite view is the panorama of the meadows from the top of St Catherine's Hill.
I'm very glad you brought that out. That was very good. Now, can we have the favourite building?
Of course, it's the cathedral, which has such great status in the city and is truly one of the great cathedrals.
And who or what is Winchester's biggest icon?
King Alfred, who has kept Winchester in the spotlight ever since the days of the Knights of the Round Table.
You know your history. Winchester, which is its best kept secret?
People come here for the city centre and the cathedral, but the countryside just beyond the city limits is outstanding.
But what's the best thing about Winchester?
That's because it has the resources of a city but is the size of a town.
And the worst?
Well, parking at the hospital.
Well, if there was one thing you could change about the city, what would that be?
We need a full-size artificial pitch for winter sports training. We have such demand on what we have at the moment for all of our youth sports teams, and it's such an important age to develop.
And the last question, please, is describe Winchester in a sentence.
A very historic city that also happens to be a really good place to raise a family.
Well, I wonder if all of us agree with James. I'm sure we've all got our own ideas. And we're going to move on now to one more announcement before we go into what's on. And that announcement is lighting up times. On Friday, the 16th of May, lights go off at 5:14 a.m. and back on again at 8:50 p.m. And on the 21st of May, the sun rises at 5:07 a.m. and sets at 8:57 p.m. As a sobering thought, the next time this team reads papers to you, it'll be very close to Midsummer's Day. Where did that time go? And the next item is what's on, and all the team have their own items to contribute to you, so I'm handing it over to who's got concerts.
Well, I have concerts. Only two of them I'm going to tell you about. But before that, I'd like to read you a review of a concert, which is then followed by a letter in this week's letters pages about that same concert. So you can be the judge. This is the review of Winchester Chamber Music Festival. That the Winchester Chamber Music Festival is now a fixture in the city's musical calendar is in no small part a tribute to the co-directors, Kate Gould and Daniel Tong, who over the years have conspired to bring us an enticing series of concerts performed with consummate skill and imbued with the excitement and sheer joy of live music making. This year's programme gave us the opportunity of comparing and contrasting the resident London Bridge Ensemble with the Heath Quartet, guesting for the first time. The Heaths certainly got the festival off to a fine start with a vigorous and searching performance of Bartók's 1927 String Quartet No. 3 and Mendelssohn's sublime Quartet Opus 13. Highlights which followed included guest artists Benjamin Marquis Gilmore and Michael Gordovich in Prokofiev's Sonata for Two Violins, pushing their instruments to the limits. Oliver Heath and Keris Jones with Bartok's short duos for two violins, wonderfully alive and idiomatic. Beethoven's Piano Trio, Opus 1, No. 3, which gave us a real embodiment of the young, groundbreaking composer, with Gurevich's intense playing visually serving to emphasise the tensions. A finely wrought and lyrical reading of the Archduke Trio, Opus 97, which showed just how far Beethoven's style had come in the intervening 15 years. There is always a special feeling of anticipation ahead of the late-night St. Lawrence concert and the Heath's Gurevich performance of Brahms' Quintet Opus 111 was rich and ample reward, a fully rounded performance in a perfect acoustic. The festival was brought to an exhilarating close with Brahms' Sextet Opus 18, three Heaths, two guests, and a festival director in brilliant form. Next year's festival will be from April the 30th to May the 3rd, of course, 2015. That review was written by someone called Bruce Edwards. This letter is written by someone called Richard York. Music festival has outgrown venue, he says. Sir, the audience for the Winchester Chamber Music Festival, which has just completed its seventh year, begins to outgrow the Discovery Centre, which seats 200. The city does not have a suitable hall into which the festival can grow. The recently published Winchester City Council's cultural strategy identifies infrastructure as both issue and opportunity, so I'd like to suggest that the Register Office site, with the small car park immediately behind it, would be a perfect place to site a chamber music hall. The existing buildings would provide an entrance and public spaces, and the auditorium, platform and artist spaces would be new built on the land behind. A hall that is excellent for chamber music may be used for many other cultural, social and commercial activities, and handsomely designed would serve as a counterpoint to the commercial premises that your report of May the 8th suggests might occupy the adjacent land. Cost will be an issue, of course, but please reflect that Hampshire in general, and Winchester in particular, appear to have received little arts lottery money. That letter is from Richard York from Alison Way, Winchester, and the two concerts that I want to tell you about are these. On Thursday, May the 22nd, the London Bridge Ensemble Trio at the Winchester Discovery Centre, 7 p.m, an evening of three piano trios, Mozart Piano Trio in E, Schumann Piano Trio in F, Opus 80, and Mendelssohn Piano Trio in C minor, Opus 66, and the entrance fee for that concert is £16.50 per person. And then on Friday, May the 23rd, there will be an organ recital in Rumsey Abbey at 7:30 p.m. The organist will be Oliver Hancock, from Portsmouth Cathedral, and the cost for that is £5 on the door.
Next we have theatre, and starting with the Theatre Royal, Winchester. Box office telephone number is 01962 840 440. To Saturday, May the 17th, High Society continues, and that is at 7:30 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. as a Saturday matinee. On Monday, May the 19th at 7:30, it is Nora and I. And on Tuesday, May the 20th at 7:30, Suggs. Wednesday and Thursday, May the 21st and 22nd, 7 p.m. and 11 a.m. on Thursday, it's the Energy Show, followed on the Friday, May the 23rd at 8 p.m. by Comedy Gala, and then on Sunday, May the 25th, Johnny and the Dead at 7:30 p.m. Another theatre in Winchester is the Chesil Theatre, And the price is continuing until Saturday, May the 17th at 7:45 p.m. with a matinee at 2:30 on Saturday. It's a play by Arthur Miller, and the Cheswell Theatre can be contacted by phone on 07527 471539 or by email www.cheswelltheatre.org.uk.
And this is about a couple of gardens that are open this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday, May 17th and 18th, at 6 Braymore Close, Eastleigh. A delightful plant lover's garden with coloured foliage and unusual plants, magnificent wisteria displays, flowers 3 foot to 4 foot in late May. And it starts at 1 p.m. and goes on till 5:30. Admission is £3. There are plants for sale and also a cup of tea. And Saturday and Sunday again, May 17th and 18th, 67 Newtown Road, Warsash. Cross a bridge to a small, secret, sloping garden with a little bit of everything. Pond, raised beds, perennials, an old Bramley underplanted with ferns, clay snail, greenhouse, pots, and a green roof on the shed. 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. Admission £3 again, plants for sale, and teas.
And I have two workshops which you or your family members might be interested in. The first is at Winchester Discovery Centre, Jury Street, telephone number 01962 873 603. And it is on Friday, May the 23rd, entitled The Causes of the First World War. It's from 10 a.m. in the morning to 4 p.m. in the afternoon and is a Workers' Educational Association study day. The cost for that is £26, but it does include lunch. And the second workshop I want to bring to your attention is at the Hampshire Record Office, Sussex Street, phone number 01962 846154, and it's on Tuesday, May the 20th, entitled Family History for Beginners. That's from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in the evening. The cost is £12, and it's obviously going to be very popular because they say booking is essential.
Well, thank you all very much. There's some interesting stuff going on there, I think. And those are all the regular features. And we're now going to launch into our editing campaign. And as usual, we will start with the headline stories. And Jerry, I'd like your top story, please.
Which is a very sad one, entitled MX Youth Death Crash. A youth killed on a motocross track near Winchester had come off his machine seconds before being hit by another bike. Bradley Hooper, 16, suffered severe injuries in a practice session for a race near Three Maids Hill. He received immediate medical help and was flown by air ambulance to Southampton General Hospital, but staff were unable to save him. The crash happened on Sunday at about 11:20 a.m. at Down Farm, Headbourne Worthy. Bradley was taking part in a day of racing organised by Portsmouth Motocross Club. Tony Child, director of Tony Moto, that operates the circuit, told the Chronicle, "To my knowledge, a rider crashed and the rider behind him landed on top of him. I believe he had stood up and then a boy came over the jump and hit him. This sort of accident can happen, but it's very rare. Our thoughts and those of all the staff are with the parents and the family. The second rider suffered serious but not life-threatening injuries. He is currently being treated in hospital. Ashley Swain, track manager, said, "Being the track builder, it's taken its toll on me quite badly. There was no fault on the track, but it's quite tragic. This is our first fatality, and it hits hard." The police have launched an investigation. One focus will be on what warnings track marshals may have given to alert riders that someone had come off their bike. The Central Hampshire coroner has been informed, and a post-mortem was held on Tuesday. An inquest was due to open yesterday. Steve Dixon from Bike It Yamaha, who organises the British Grand Prix at Matley Basin near Winchester, said, "Such a tragedy, and a huge loss for all the family of Brad. Our condolences." He said he would organise a tribute at the forthcoming British GP. Nick Phillips, head of Farnham Heath End School, posted on the Facebook site, "The outpourings of grief today, when staff and students heard of your tragic, early and untimely death, was a testament to the high regard of all who knew you, even if they didn't know you well. Everyone held you in esteem. You were a student who milked life for every drop of pleasure and joy you could get. We will all miss you, and that infectious sense of humour and massive joyous smile. R.I.P. Brad." The track has been controversial, with many complaints about noise pollution. South Wanstead Parish Councillor David Selby said, "There's still quite a lot of opposition to motocross in the village. There are concerns for various reasons. Some emails about this fatality have said this is what we all dreaded."
Council homes too costly for those who need them. High rents could keep people trapped in benefit system. Winchester families on low incomes could be left struggling to afford the rents on a new scheme of 21 council homes in Stanmore, a Labour councillor has warned. Councillor Janet Berry told Cabinet how calibrating weekly payments to 80% of the market rate for the city, as proposed by officers, could leave some families spending two-thirds of their income on housing. Members voted that a formal planning application be submitted for the development on the site of the former New Queen's Head pub, comprising 5 three-bedroom houses, 9 two-bedroom houses, as well as a cluster of flats and a bungalow. But they also heard how renting a three-bed council house in the area currently costs £128 per week, yet a comparative property in the new development has a recommended rental value of £198. Warning that it was the council's role to provide safe and secure housing to those on low incomes, Councillor Berry said, "These homes will not necessarily be affordable to all those who need them. At this level, the rent could take two-thirds of the home's income. It could keep people trapped in the benefits system." She said other councils in the country had chosen not to adopt the market-sensitive rental guidelines if they felt it put homes financially out of reach for some. Winchester City Council's rent policy for newly built properties is currently under review. Council leader Keith Wood said, "It's something we need to be flexible on, or we will miss the point of all this. There's plenty of time to sort out things that should have been raised." The total cost of the scheme, including buying the land for £986,000 and improving access to the nearby Carroll Centre, is £4.1 million. The meeting also heard how the seemingly irrepressible Winchester housing market had now shunted the cost of buying a three-bedroomed house out of the reach of those earning £60,000 a year. People on modest or even reasonable wages cannot afford to buy into housing in Winchester of £250,000 or upwards, said Councillor Tony Coates.
Yes, thank you. An editorial comment, excuse me, in the Hampshire Chronicle this week focuses on that particular subject, heading its item, City Should Rethink Its Rents Policy. Although it is always sad when a pub disappears, it is good news that Winchester City Council is building 21 homes on the site of the new Queen's Head in Stanmore. These will be among the first council houses to be built in the district since the 1980s. However, as this newspaper reports, the policy of linking rents to 80% of market rates is worrying for anyone concerned with the social fabric of the city. Rents for a three-bedroomed house at the new Queen's Head could be as high as £198 a week against the more usual £128. Paying nearly £800 a month for a council house equates to a £100,000 mortgage, a sum which will deny these homes to a large number of people on low incomes. There is force for linking rents with market rates, but Winchester is a special case, with its market driven by the London effect. Housing prices and rents reflect the fact the capital is only 55 minutes away by train. The City Council should review its policy.
And related to that, there is a letter from Rosemary Horsey of Ashley near Stockbridge with the title Pressure to Build Will Just Continue. I share Peter Moore's concern about the impossibility of providing enough housing for an ever-growing population. The pressure to build homes and other infrastructure will continue unless steps are taken to check this growth. Inevitably, agricultural land will be lost to development, and Barton Farm is just one local example. This has serious implications for our future food security. Although we import 40% of our food, and there will be increasing competition as the world's population increases from the current 7 billion to 9.6 billion, the United Nations medium projection for 2050. As Mr. Moore suggests, our politicians must address this problem, and we, the electors, must make them aware of their responsibilities. Rosemary Horsey, The Old Manor, Ashley, Stockbridge.
The headline of this next article is Bus Cuts in Offing as County Council Consultation Comes in for Criticism. But I have a letter that I'm going to read to you first, which is relevant. And it's written by Karen Barrett, and the heading is Easy Target When It Comes to Cuts. Having spoken to many residents in my local full flood area in recent weeks, I'm concerned that many are unaware of the consultation currently being undertaken by Hampshire County Council over its proposed cuts to public and community transport services. In simple terms, in its effort to accommodate government cuts to its overall budget, HCC is choosing to target subsidised bus services and also lists scrapping the 9 a.m. start for the senior bus pass as one of the options under consideration. The deadline for comment is May 31st, and further information about which bus services might be affected can be found on HCC's website, along with downloadable consultation forms. Although organised groups can and will respond, as WINAC and Greening Full Flood are doing, it is important for individuals to make their voices heard too. I hope that even at this late stage, the County Council might be persuaded to reconsider its overall strategy, but I doubt whether many of the decision makers are dependent on public transport, and fear that those of us who are present an easy target when it comes to cutting services. And that was written by Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester. The article concerning this is as follows. Bus services across Hampshire could be in the firing line after a public consultation that ends on May 31st. Hampshire County Council has been asking the public about potential changes that could see cuts to subsidies and services. But the county has come under fire for not publicising the consultation widely enough, except on the internet. Elizabeth King, who is 83, a retired civil servant from St Cross, Winchester, said, "This consultation has been going on since March the 5th, but most people I have spoken to know nothing about it. So many bus users do not access the internet. There has been nothing on the buses, no leaflets. It is a farce if you're talking about a consultation, but not consulting," added Miss King. The County Council says it needs to save up to £1.5 million from public and community transport spending by 2015/16. The options include cutting support for Sunday or evening services, reducing the frequency of buses, ceasing the 9 a.m. early start for the older person's bus pass, and replacing buses with taxi shares. Currently, Hampshire spends £4.7 million on supporting buses and ferries, with a further £1 million spent on supporting community transport services. The county supports 200 services, accounting for 28% of bus journeys, the other 72% being made on services which do not receive a subsidy. Responding to the criticism about poor communication, the County Council leader, Councillor Roy Perry, said in a statement, "As well as providing information to all the local media on how residents may take part, either online or by phoning or emailing to request a form, which can then be posted back or returned to a local library, around 5,000 forms have been distributed so far to libraries, village shops, post offices, bus operators and bus stations, and handed out on buses during many of the journeys that the council currently subsidises. The council has so far received around 700 responses, plus a further 1,000 forms online. There are posters on buses which feature the phone number and address for people to contact, as well as the website address and a QR code, should residents wish to contact us online," added Councillor Perry.
And there is a slightly lighter note that we can finish the subject of buses on in the Hampshire Chronicle, and it's entitled "Hop on a Bus to the Theatre." The Theatre Royal Winchester will be running a free bus service to performances later this year. The scheme will be for residents in rural parts of Winchester and has been designed to encourage a bigger audience. A free bus ride will be included in the price of a discounted theatre ticket, and designated collection points will be in Bishop's Waltham, Meon Valley and Southern Parishes. Places will be limited to 16 people per bus, and buses will be provided by the Meon Valley Community Bus Association. Hampshire County Council is helping with the scheme. The theatre bus scheme will be launched for Shakespeare's comedy As You Like It, and I should think they jolly well would. And that's on Wednesday the 4th of June and Thursday the 5th of June at 7:30 p.m. If you want details of pick-up points, visit Theatre Royal Winchester, all one word, lowercase, theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk/free-bus, free-bus. Or to book tickets, call 01962 840 440. 01962 840 440. And the last headline in this section is from John. I think you have County Faces Mental Health Bed Shortage.
I do. County Faces Mental Health Bed Shortage. There are not enough hospital beds for people suffering severe mental health issues in Hampshire, a meeting heard. As many as 10 patients per month have to be transferred to private units due to a lack of space in existing facilities within the Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust area. It comes after the controversial decision in 2012 to close 48 of the 165 acute hospital beds in the region and make mental health care more community-based. Woodhaven in Calmore lost 24 beds, with the site now used for people with learning disabilities. Hampshire County Council's Health Overview and Scrutiny Committee, HOSC, met health chiefs to discuss the changes and heard that bed blocking was eating up valuable resources and funding. Dr. Leslie Stevens, Clinical Director for Mental Health of SHFT, said, 10 beds per month are used out of area. Nationally, mental health services have experienced the same issues that we have locally. We should have enough resources to deliver community services, and what we do in the community is working well. It was expected that significant improvements would have been seen by April. However, councillors heard that the situation remains unchanged, and some were concerned about families and friends looking after loved ones. County Councillor David Harrison gave an example. He had been cared for by his 80-year-old mother and was arrested 6 weeks ago by police and has been in Winchester Prison ever since. It is the worst place for him, and this is happening in our community. His mother is worried sick. People are thrust into a position to care for people that are unwell when we haven't got a community service that is fit for purpose. Councillors recommended that housing and funding should be further discussed to tackle the issue.
Well, there are some items that I remember being reported on in the Hampshire Chronicle over the last few weeks, and one of them, you might remember, was an arson case of a house that was being built, was burnt down, in Hatherley Road, and it looks like there's development there now, if you'll pardon the pun. A housing scheme, which burned to the ground just weeks before completion last summer, is about to welcome its new owners. Simmons View in Hatherley Road, Fulford, was 4 weeks from being finished when an arson attack destroyed it last August. 10 families were forced to evacuate their home in the early hours. Now the house and 3 apartments built by the developers Millgate has been completed and sold. Millgate director Robert Carter said, "My team has built this development twice within 1 year, and they have done a fantastic job." The company had borrowed £850,000 from NatWest for the acquisition of the Hatherley Road site and development costs. NatWest manager Mark Legasic worked with Millgate to ensure the loan was still available despite the delay caused by the fire. And it is heartening to know that that house, which was burnt to the ground, is now a really rather beautiful looking home.
Round Table inspires Twin Cities new bench. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, has unveiled a new bench in Winchester's German twin town of Gießen. At the opening of the Hessian Garden Festival in the town, Councillor Jeffs was accompanied by the Mayoress of Winchester, Barbara Jeffs, and Councillor Robert Johnston, who is also chairman of the Winchester Anglo-German Society. The festival only takes place every 4 years, and was also attended by mayors from Israel, Italy, the Czech Republic, and Hungary. Councillor Johnston said, "The bench represents the round table in the Great Hall. You can see how you would sit around it as they would have done." And the article is illustrated by quite a large picture of Councillor Jeffs sitting on the this bench with the Mayoress of Winchester, and standing behind him is Councillor Robert Johnston.
Well, in these days when a lot of people complain about young people, I think it's really nice that we've got so many items in the Chronicle this week dealing with a very positive aspect of young people, their achievements and their inspiration and aspiration. And the first one is entitled New Igloo, and I do mean igloo, makes pupils and chickens happy. Children at King's Somborne School showed their gratitude to Winchester-based firm that donated an igloo to the school. The head teacher of the school, Julie Way, said the children and chickens of King's Somborne Church of England Primary were delighted with the igloo donated by Denplan. An igloo is a brand of chicken coop designed and marketed by Omelet Limited that is intended for small-scale backyard chicken keeping. Denplan's Stuart Solly and Joe Horscroft were presented with a card made and signed by the pupils. Miss Way said, "The chickens are laying aplenty and are inspiring the children to learn about the life cycles of chickens and to see where our food comes from." Bryony Hutchins led the project and is not only delighted with the motivation to learning, but also the way the chickens have a lovely, calming presence in the eco-garden and give a friendly welcome to the children every morning. And there is a photograph of the children and Stuart Solly of Denplan, and I assume that the strange building in the background is in fact the igloo, which is making the chickens so happy. And the second of these items about young people is entitled Recycle a Cycle Scheme is a Hit with Youngsters. Police officers at Eastleigh have joined young people in the Recycle a Cycle Scheme to get bikes up to scratch to raise money for the Y Zone Youth Centre in Fair Oak. Eastleigh Police donated 9 bikes that have been discarded locally, and these will be refurbished and sold to raise funds for the youth centre. The sessions, in which young people learnt about bike maintenance, began in February, and already 20 youngsters have taken part. PCSO Ian Nicholson said, "The volunteers were very hands-on and loved helping out." And a third brief little item, headed Brownies Centenary, says, "Hampshire Brownie Groups are celebrating their 100th anniversary this year. More than 50 brownie units across Winchester and Southampton will be taking part in the Look at Us relay walk across the county. The relay will start in Kingsworthy on Saturday, May the 17th, and finished at Foxlease in the New Forest the next day. Brownies walk from each area will take part by walking 2 miles to celebrate their centenary. And I wonder how many of our listeners were brownies once upon a time.
Well, I was a brownie. I can't remember very much about it, though. this next item is a story of one girl's challenge back to better health. It's entitled Lydia's Flying High Again. It's by Charlotte Neal, but a Winchester woman recovering from anorexia is preparing for her greatest challenge yet and hopes to inspire others like her. For Lydia Crump, 21, of Broadchalk Down Badger Farm, the past 2 years have been hard, with much of the last year spent in hospital after her weight plummeted to just 5.5 stone. Now she's getting ready for a tandem skydive to raise money for Action Aid, who help people in poverty around the world. She said, "I've always wanted to do it. So I thought," and this is her language, not mine, "so I thought, why the bloody hell not? It's for a good cause and a bit scary, but hopefully I won't have time to think about it on the way up." The ex-Cardiff University student said the illness was triggered back in 2012. "I think it was university. I felt a bit lost and was struggling with my work. I began to lose more and more weight. It spiralled. And just 1.5 years into her media and journalism course, she made the decision to return home, where she was admitted to hospital last year. I lost so much of my life. I could have spent that time doing stuff, and I just wanted to carry on, really. Mental illness is real, and that's why I wanted to do a skydive for charity for people in poverty with health issues that they cannot help. I'm putting on weight and experiencing more of life. Back to how I was and doing normal things. There's so much I didn't do. Lydia's now started pottery and yoga to build muscle ahead of the jump and says she hopes to inspire other people like her. Recovery is a long process, both physically and mentally. I just take each day as it comes, and I'm grateful for being happy and healthy and have such a loving and strong network of family and friends. I hope my story can give hope to those struggling with similar issues and to remember to always think positively. That money can make a real difference to people who cannot afford the basics and haven't had the chance of education. It makes our problems seem so insignificant. And there is a picture of still a very tiny Lydia, all done up in a great big fur hat and coat. But she has a golfing club and she's just about to hit the ball off the tee and is extremely happy about what she's doing. If you want to sponsor Lydia for May the 31st, go to doitforcharity, all one word, lowercase, doitforcharity.com/lcrump. Now that's a very, very brave young lady. Who's got the next one? John has.
Well, I've got a couple which are connected, and as we've just been hearing from Jerry and Roz, there's a lot in this week's paper about young people and the wonderful things they're doing, and it's always gratifying and encouraging. These are two pieces which are connected. If I say the word penguins and leave you to get the connection as I read, you'll see what I mean. The first one is Golden Girl Evie is a class apart. St Swithin's junior school pupil Evie Johnson, age 11, from Winchester, won a gold medal in the National Skills Diving Finals. Evie qualified for the finals by winning the South East regional event. She travelled to Sheffield with 24 divers from Southampton Diving Academy who had all qualified. Evie, who swims for Winchester City Penguins Club, competed in the age 11 category against 41 divers from across the country, performing a total of 12 dives from poolside, 1 metre and 3 metre springboards. In an extremely tense competition, which lasted more than 90 minutes, she was awarded several 9.5 scores and nines, finishing in the gold medal place by a clear margin. And the second piece has as its headline, Penguins Project gets pupils in the pool. Winchester schoolchildren have been awarded for their swimming abilities. Hairstock Primary School pupils took part in the Swim for the Future project. Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club run the project, which aims to provide a free swimming course to children in years 5 and 6. Each pupil at Hairstock was given a certificate of achievement after completing the course, which serves as a top-up session for children learning to swim. The project is sponsored by Winchester Round Table and aims to reduce the number of children in the city who leave primary school unable to swim a minimum of 25 metres.
This is about road racing and the logo for the Ropley 10K road race has been designed in an annual competition by the children of Ropley Primary School. In return for this local support, the event has donated money to the school's sporting activities and also other local groups. This year, the Ropley 10K road race will take place on the morning of Sunday, May the 25th. A great asset of the event is pre- and post-race sports massage, provided by the students of adult continuing education of Peter Simmons College, Winchester. All event details and a course map with elevation profile are available on the Ropley 10K website, together with the online entry form.
And Robin, I think, is going to finish this section off with some dazzly dancers, did you say?
Dancers Dazzle is the title of this. Business bosses took to the dance floor at the weekend for Winchester's answer to Strictly Come Dancing. In a jam-packed competition run by Winchester City Council, dancers from across the district were challenged with teaching some of the city's VIPs how to sashay like the stars. The Step Up initiative came to a climax on Sunday with a glitzy grand finale at the Guildhall, which was packed to the rafters with over 250 audience members. Special guest Fala Hassan kept everybody entertained. As Poppin' Ron, he was a semi-finalist on Britain's Got Talent and even gave Mayor Ernie Jeffs an impromptu street dance lesson. It was Eloisa Broadbent and Kat Goodchild from the Carroll Centre in Stanmore who dazzled the crowd with their upbeat hip-hop routine with the Firefly Theatre School and were crowned the winners. They said, "We are still buzzing and very happy to bring the trophy to the Carroll Centre. We hope that our effort and enthusiasm will inspire children, youth and adults in the community to take up dance as a healthy and fun lifestyle." Director of Firefly Theatre School, Jessica Waters-Levins, was thrilled with their win. "It was just fantastic to be involved, and it was such a beautiful evening where everyone showcased their work. Winning was a bonus for us." The competitors were judged by Katie Francis from Blue Apple Theatre, Mayor Ernie Jeffs, Poppin' Ron, Sally Stanyard, a local dance school owner, and Kathy Seago, a dance lecturer at the university. The competition has seen flash mobs in the city and was designed to encourage people of all ages to get off the sofa and into their dancing shoes to get fit. Assistant Director of Economy and Communities at the City Council, Eloise Appleby, said, "Our glitzy evening at the Guildhall put dance in the spotlight by delivering a fun and fabulous version of a popular TV dance contest. Now the Step Up Winchester Challenge is for local people of all ages to take up dance and become healthier in the process." Uni students and Sally Stanyard's dance school also showcase different levels of dance, and Poppin' Ron, alongside Integrate's Josh Hoffman, left jaws dropping with a display of spinning and floor work.
Well, I have to say, it really is encouraging to hear so many young people doing such wonderful things, but out of all of that, the one I want to meet is Poppin' Ron. I wonder what he does. Well, before we finish, I think we've each got an item of news that we'd like to share with you finally. And this one will catch us up with another sad headline from last week, which was the hit and run of the bride-to-be. And there's a follow-up on this one. It's headed "Hit and Run Death of Bride-to-be." She was a hard-working and dedicated mother. The family of a Winchester woman who was killed in an alleged hit and run last month have paid tribute to her. Gwen Valentine, a 62-year-old mother of three, was struck whilst walking on the isolated Thalty Wheel Road on the Isle of Man and died at the scene on April the 26th. She was on holiday with her fiancé and was due to marry in June. Ms. Valentine, who lived in Wavell Way, Stanmore, had recently retired from IBM at Hursley. Her cousin, Tricia Hobbs of Headbourneworthy, said she was a dedicated family woman who spent her life supporting her family. "She was a big part of our family. She was born in South Africa and came to the country without many family herself, and we were definitely the closest she had." Gwen had only just retired. "The wedding invitation is still on my table. It's awful and tragic. She was really excited and she had just invited me to her hen party in early June. She was a family-orientated woman, really, and they meant so much to her. They've all done really well. The children are gifted, which is lovely. She spent her life supporting them. She was a single mum and her life was just coming together. so it was really shocking and sad. Mrs. Hobbs also said that the church played a big role in Mrs. Valentine's life, and she was well supported by her church community. Her family released a statement through the police. She was taken in the prime of her life, and all who knew her loved her for her zest for life, humour, fearlessness and compassion. She will be sorely missed. The Chronicle approached IBM, but they had not responded to requests for comment. And a final paragraph here. Miss Valentine died of blunt force chest injuries, an inquest was told. Isle of Man coroner John Needham noted the cause of death before adjourning proceedings to a date to be fixed. He said, "I am only opening the inquest due to ongoing criminal inquiries." A 30-year-old local man has been charged with causing death by dangerous driving.
This article may take you back more years than you want to admit. It's headed, "A Rare Chance to Buy Major Farm Estate." One of the largest Hampshire farming estates to come to market for several years is being offered for sale. The Trinley Estate is 1,398 acres of good quality Grade 3 land, with a range of modern farm buildings, office, over 4,800 tonnes of grain storage, a self-storage business and a dozen cottages. Sounds good. The farm was bought by the Dance family in the mid-1930s, and Nelson Dance took occupation in 1937 during the transition from horse to tractor. Unable to afford tractors, it was cheaper and more efficient to purchase cars with 20 to 30 horsepower engines at £5 to £10 each, and then attach trailers to bring the harvest in. His neighbours thought him mad when he acquired a second-hand combine in 1939, one of the first in Hampshire. The estate is being sold by the trustees of Nelson Dance. I've had the privilege of continuing my grandfather's work for the last 10 years, but it was always the intention to sell, says Andrew Hughes, who has farmed in partnership with the trustees. Located between Andover and the popular Bourne Valley to the east, the farm is approximately 1,240 acres of arable land and 56 acres of pasture.
And I have a nostalgic piece with the title "When the Saints Went Marching On at Wembley," and it's looking back at Southampton's 1976 FA Cup final victory. It was the goal that sealed the greatest achievement in the history of the Saints and sent the city of Southampton into a frenzy of celebration. When Bobby Stokes fired the ball across the line in the dying minutes of the 1976 FA Cup final, it provided the fairy tale end to the David and Goliath encounter. 38 years ago, on May the 1st, 1976, the Saints walked out in brilliant sunshine onto the hallowed turf under the twin towers of the legendary Old Wembley Stadium to face football heavyweights Manchester United in the FA Cup final. The inevitable looked likely right from the first whistle, as United launched wave after wave of attack to test Saints' resolve. But goalkeeper Ian Turner pulled off a string of remarkable saves to keep the Saints in it. As the game played on, the belief that the South Coast underdog would get something from the game grew with each minute. And then, in the 83rd minute, the magic and romance of the FA Cup burst into life as Saints striker Bobby Stokes fired a decisive strike past Alex Stepney and into the bottom right corner of the United goal to secure the FA Cup for the first time in Saints history. And the article is illustrated by four black and white photographs of various stages of the team's celebration, holding the cup aloft, being presented with the cup by the Queen, and also wearing the cup on one of the players' heads.
My last piece is entitled Caroline's Cards Are a Prayer for Peace. A popular Hampshire artist has designed a commemorative prayer card to celebrate the role of Winchester Cathedral during the First World War. Caroline Hervey Bathurst has designed special prayer cards to be handed out during a tour. The tour explores how the cathedral was used during the war, and the card includes a prayer for peace and Lawrence Binyon's poem, For the Fallen. Canon Rowley Ream said, "The centenary of the start of the Great War gives the country a chance to re-evaluate and remember. Cathedrals seem significant places in which to commemorate an event of the scale and impact. We are very grateful to Caroline for all her hard work." The tour is on the last Friday of every month from June until October, and again on Friday, November the 14th, from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. Tickets cost £10, including tea and cake, and can be booked from the box office on 01962 857 275. I'll read that again. 01962 857 275.
And my final piece is entitled Five Men and a Bear Pedal to Sweden. They battled through stormy weather and cycled over 1,000 miles in a bid to raise £10,000 for charity and have now arrived home safely. Five friends completed the challenge of a lifetime, cycling from Allsford to Sweden in 12 days. Lee Grant of Orchard Close in Allsford was joined by his brother Adam, Thomas Hasler, Andrew Martin and Craig Rowson. They set off from Sunhill Infant School, where Lee's children Joseph and Emily are pupils. They had a big send-off from the children and cycled for 3 days through Farnborough and London before catching the ferry to Esbjerg in Denmark. From there, the five battled torrential rain and strong winds on the road to Copenhagen before travelling to Malmö and finishing in Norrtälje. So far, they have raised £6,500 for CRY, that's C-R-Y, which raises awareness of conditions that lead to young cardiac death and sudden death syndrome, the Phyllis Tuckwell Hospice, and R for Foot, which offers resources to families caring for children who have experienced neglect, abuse, or domestic violence. Lee said their hard ride was worth it. Cycling was the easy part of it. It was the weather that hit us hard. We camped, so we had ice inside and outside our tents. Hail, lightning, thunder, wind, and torrential rain, he said. 3 years ago, we cycled to Australia for scope, so we wanted to make it harder this time. If I can talk my wife into letting me go off again, I'd like to go further. It will need to be even harder, which scares me a little bit, if I'm honest. The group took Derek the teddy bear with them and took photos of him at points along the way, which they will present to pupils at Sun Hill at a special assembly. Donations are still pouring in, and Lee said they hope to reach £10,000 soon. And if you want to make a donation, go to justgiving.com/teams/cycle2Sweden. And the two is actually the number two, not the word, cycle2Sweden.
Well, I think it's appropriate that we should finish off with one very short item as an alternative look at the news. And Jerry's got something from Belgarn, which might make you smile.
Yes, and the reason Roz says it's appropriate is because it's entitled Peddling Parson Would Prefer Anything But Pink. They say God moves in mysterious ways, but how often on a pink bike with only one gear? Spotted by eagle-eyed Chronicle reader Siobhan Hand on the FreeCycle website. Does any kind soul have a good men's road bike they would be willing to donate to our vicar? He is currently cutting a dash around Winchester on a pink one with one gear And fetching as that sounds, one with a few more gears, and perhaps not pink, would be very gratefully received. Does anyone have any idea who it is?
Well, I wonder if you do. And that's it. That's our editing effort done for this week. And that just leaves me the job of thanking our hard-working copying teams. We'd normally be thanking outside editors, but this time I'm going to say thank you very much to all of you for doing this special editing job. And to John, thank you very much for coming along. So it is from us. Goodbye from Claire.
Bye.
And Robin.
Bye.
From Jerry.
Bye.
And again from our chairman, John.
Goodbye.
And I'm Roz saying goodbye. We hope you have a good week, and I hope you're looking forward to next week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle. And that's just me signing off and saying goodbye for now. When you finished with your memory stick, could you put it carefully back into the envelope, tucking the cord inside, and take the label off the front of it and stick that inside the envelope as well? Thank you very much, and goodbye.